You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and I am the founder of Stop Feeding the Predators. And today, I want to give a little more information. We've had a lot of new listeners come in lately, and I want to give a little more information about what Stop Feeding the Predators is, why it was started, who's running it, what are we doing, and all of that kind of stuff. Because with a name like Stop Feeding the Predators, I'm sure many people wonder, what does that mean? Where does that come from? Stop Feeding the Predators is a nonprofit 501c3. We are based in Columbus, Ohio. We have office, we have a training room, we have a conference center, and we offer support groups for men. We also offer support groups for women. At this time, we do not offer support groups for children. And that is only because most of the children we've encountered have ongoing or an existing case that is about to come up, and we don't want to interfere with that in any way. There are resources we can refer people to that do offer support for children that are currently going through cases. Stop Feeding the Predators offers classes for people to find out, how do we help protect our kids? People who want information, how does this happen? Why does this happen? What do we do to keep it from happening? Things like that. We also give presentations for recovery groups, homeless shelters, any organization that wants more information about how does this happen? Can we recover from it? What do we do to keep our kids safe? What do we do if something happens? And just in general, what is this? I've been surprised at the number of people that have not had experience, either as a survivor or as a family member of someone who has been sexually assaulted. Because you have to understand, when I grew up, I thought I was the only one that was sexually assaulted. I thought it was my fault. And as I got to talking to people, I would discover, you know, friends, girlfriends, guy friends in school, things that had happened to them. And I slowly learned I wasn't the only one. And through all of my years of growing and healing from what I had been through, I had become more vocal about what had happened, not looking for pity, not looking for anything, just expressing that this awful thing happened and it shouldn't have, and if it's happened to anyone else, it shouldn't have happened to them either. And I've had so many people come to me and tell me things that have happened to them that I almost started to forget that there exist in the world people this didn't happen to. So if you've never been sexually assaulted and you don't know anyone who has, first of all, I am so glad that you have not had to experience it. But if you look at statistics, which I don't like, but if you look at statistics, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys are sexually assaulted before the age of 18. That's based on reports, and I believe those reports are skewed because those are only the ones that have reported. So we don't know how many haven't disclosed. So that number could be significantly higher. So if you feel that sexual assault of children is something that you don't need to think about, I would caution you that it's more prevalent than you realize. Why I started Stop Feeding the Predators to begin with. Growing up, I had been through so many different things, sexual assault from different people, and I think I was probably about 15 when I decided that I was going to write a book and write every awful thing that had happened, because I thought, if this was made into a movie, nobody would ever believe it. Nobody would want to watch it. Who would want to see all this horrible stuff happen to one little kid? But I decided that I was going to write a book, and no graphic details in the book, but to share how easily these people manipulated me, how easily they were able to take advantage of me because as a child, I was limited on my resource options. I was limited on my rights, or so I thought. I saw something the other day that said it was a new law that passed, and it's wonderful because they're now giving rights, like a printed out what your rights are, to abuse victims, for victims of domestic violence. And it seems almost silly to have to tell people that they have the right to not be hit. They have the right to not be manipulated and abused. And it only seems silly to people that haven't experienced it. To those of us who have been abused, who have been manipulated, who have been coerced to be under the power and control of someone else, I didn't know I had the right to be left alone physically. I didn't know that I had certain rights. So I wanted to write the book to let people know these awful things happen and they should have never happened. I had the right to a normal, healthy, happy childhood, or at least a moderately normal, mediocrely happy childhood. You know, I wasn't expecting a pony and a silver spoon when I was born kind of thing, but it certainly didn't need to be the way that it was. And I don't blame my mom. My mom did not experience sexual assault. She did not know that people that she trusted were doing these things to me. In fact, she only found out a year ago that when she took me for the kindergarten physical, that when she stepped out of the room to finish up paperwork, as the doctor suggested she do, he raped me. My mom had no idea. And if you don't know that something's going on, you can't protect your child from it. And that's the other reason for the book. I wanted parents, I wanted people who were considering being parents, foster parents, adoptive parents, anybody that was going to be caring for a child, I wanted people to know that this stuff happens and what to look for, how to protect the kids. Again, nothing's 100%. But if you don't know that this could happen, you don't know to protect from it. I think in the 70s, there was a big thing. Everybody was smoking in the 70s, you know, smoking cigarettes. It was a big, lots of smokers. I now here in, you know, 2015, there aren't very many smokers, and, you know, more of the population is non-smoking. But back in the 70s, we had a lot of smokers, and there were a lot of cautions to people about don't smoke and use hairspray at the same time. Don't have a lit cigarette, you know, next to cologne or things like that, because they're flammable. And it may seem silly, but if you didn't know that and you were smoking a cigarette and sprayed hairspray on your hair and, whoop, you know, up in flames kind of thing, you'd kind of wish somebody had told you to worry about that ahead of time. So that's what the book's for, to help people know these things happen, how to protect from them, how to understand how easily and how quickly it can happen, even with parents being in the same house. And the grooming process, where these aggressors slowly manipulate children into being more and more accepting of their advances, the grooming process normally happens in front of the parents, and the aggressors, to some degree, they groom the parents as well. And along with that, the children are being groomed while the parents are in the room. And again, if you don't know what to look for, you don't know what to protect your child from. When I said that I was going to start writing the book, a friend of mine who is a published author, I got a hold of him, asked him some questions. How do I do this? What's the best way to get the book written? You know, do I need editors? What do I do? And the more he found out about what I wanted to do and what I was writing about and why I wanted to do it, he told me that I should write the book, but he's very strongly encouraged me to start a nonprofit organization. he said, as a book, you're going to help some people. As a nonprofit organization, you're going to help a lot more people, and you'll give them the resource to receive that help, to find the healing from their abuse. And next thing I know, I've got business cards and brochures. A little while after that, I saw this business, this nonprofit business, just accelerating faster than I know what to do with. If you've spoken with me in person, you've probably heard me say, or if you've heard me give a presentation, you've probably heard me say, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's because partly self-esteem, self-worth, is still in the repair process from the abuse I've been through. Part of it is the people that I have been able to help don't necessarily come back and say, you helped me by saying this, or you helped me by doing that. And I don't do the presentations. I didn't start Stop Feeding the Predators for the quote unquote self-glory. I really don't care. But when I tell people I don't know what I'm doing, it's because I don't set out with intent to change lives. I don't set out with intent of helping people get away from their abusers. My intent, and what's the expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. My reason for starting Stop Feeding the Predators as a nonprofit is to offer to people what I didn't have. It seems to me that as a child, I would have liked to have had a resource that didn't cost anything, that wasn't going to call my mom, that wasn't going to run it through the insurance, that wasn't going to make me feel like I deserved it. It would have been great to have a resource that would help me. And there is no cost for Stop Feeding the Predators. We have support groups and various things. There's no cost. If someone wants to make a donation, absolutely, I will accept a donation. I appreciate it. It helps cover, office expenses and copying costs for brochures and things like that. But I don't even want $2 to interfere with somebody coming and saying, I need some help. I want to offer compassion and understanding to people, whether they were sexually assaulted themselves or whether their parent or family member of someone who's been sexually assaulted. I wanted, growing up as a child and later as a mom whose daughter had been raped, I wanted non-judgmental help in finding resources. I wanted emotional support. I wanted a physical presence just to reassure me, to a comfort level that I could do the next right thing for my situation. And that's what we do with Stop Feeding the Predators. We offer compassion. Many of us know firsthand the feelings, the emotions, the trauma, the emotional turmoil. And no, there's no time frame. It doesn't matter if you were raped when you were 6 months old and now you're 40 and you're starting to feel those emotional traumas of what you went through. That's normal. I'm sorry to say, but that's normal. And things that are not helpful is people saying, why don't you get over it? Oh, that was so long ago. Oh, how do you even remember that? And I tell people, it doesn't matter how long ago it was. If something happens to you that affects your emotions deeply, that is probably going to be with you for your life. And even when you find healing from the pain of it, you won't ever forget the feelings that you had. You may be able to get to a point where you don't re-feel them. I'm trying to think, like, if somebody says, you know, do you like the taste of pickles? Even though you can think about the taste of pickles, your tongue doesn't necessarily feel like it's tasting pickles. I know, I give the weirdest analogies. Bear with me. But when you get to a point of healing from certain emotions from the abuse, you can still remember feeling the pain, emotional pain. You can still remember feeling the guilt. But you don't relive feeling the guilt. I hope that makes sense. Stop Feeding the Predators offers a physical presence. We have traveled to a couple different locations, and we are not involved in the case, and we don't want to interfere with the attorneys or the family's rights to make decisions. So what Stop Feeding the Predators does is we literally are a fly on the wall kind of thing. We come and we sit with you, and we help by just being there, literally just being there. You know, it's not our place to tell you what decisions to make. I am 48. I'm still figuring out my path. I couldn't possibly tell you what yours is supposed to be. I can reassure you that you're doing the best you can. I can offer suggestions based on personal experience, based on case information, based on legalities and rights, and if you do this, then that, and if you do that, then, you know, this could potentially come up in the future, and helping people make sure that they address the things that at that moment in time they're not aware that should be addressed now. For example, I've got a family member who has very difficult situation with an ex and the care of their child. And at the time that decisions were made, obviously they were made under those circumstances with that amount of information. And looking back, she can see where she wishes she'd made some different decisions. And, you know, I'm not saying that Stop Feeding Predators is going to be able to have insight on every possible scenario, but we can offer some insight. Have you thought about this? Are you comfortable with that? Is this okay with you if this happens, because there's the possibility? Things like that. Again, we're not going to tell you what to do. We're going to make sure that you have information. And again, since we've been through some of this, again, not every case is going to be the same, but since we've been through some of this, we have a little more insight. I compare it to when you're building a house, it's good to talk to an engineer because they've built houses before. If you want to have a bonfire in your backyard, it's a good idea to maybe just chit-chat with a fireman for a moment and say, hey, what's the best place in my yard to put a fire pit, and how much can I burn, and what should I, you know, have around it? Because there are people that have decided to start a little, you know, fire pit in their backyard, and next thing you know, half the yard's on fire because they didn't take into account dead grass, they didn't take into account the tree that was nearby, and so on. So Stop Feeding the Predators is not going to have all the answers. We don't claim to. But we can offer you the emotional support. We can offer a physical presence as you're going through some really difficult things. And sometimes just knowing that somebody has your back helps us to calm down and make healthier decisions. We feel that, you know, when at least I do, I know when somebody's there for me, and I know they're there for me no matter what decision I make, whether I make the right decision, the wrong decision, the right decision for now, 10 years from now I find out that was the worst decision. Just having somebody with me helps me to feel like I have the right to make an informed decision. And it allows me the comfort level to ask questions that I might have been bulldozed over and not ask those questions if somebody wasn't there to support me. Since I started the nonprofit aspect of Stop Feeding the Predators, I can't even begin to describe all of the things that have happened. Like I said, business cards were printed up when my friend said you should make this a nonprofit. So I made it a nonprofit and I printed up 1,000 business cards, and they were gone, I think, in a matter of 2 months. And that was without a lot of effort. That was, you know, finding people that said, hey, what are you doing? Oh, give me a couple cards. Oh, give me another one. I'm going to give one to my friend. Oh, give me another one. I'm going to put some at work. You know, I've had doctor's offices and people that work in hospitals, in the lab departments and things like that, who have taken literally piles of business cards and either posted them on the bulletin board in the employee workroom or put them in the waiting area when they have clients coming in. And it just, it amazes me how many other people want to help people that have been sexually assaulted. It gives me hope. You know, for so many years, I thought I was the only one and I deserved it and it was my fault. And then after I start, you know, a nonprofit to help people like me, to help people that were assaulted, to help parents of kids who were assaulted, I've come to discover there's a whole world full of people who care and think it shouldn't have happened and want to take steps to help people find their healing and want to take even bigger steps to help protect kids. And it's just been amazing how many people from all different walks of life, from all different areas of my daily routine. You know, I was at a transmission shop and started talking to the guy behind the counter, and I gave him a brochure, and next thing I know, the guy that was waiting for his car to be finished and one of the mechanics that had come into the room to ask a question about somebody's car, you know, three guys and me standing there talking about sexual assault of children. And the weird thing is, it wasn't weird. And the gentleman behind the counter said, I think it's amazing that you can stand there and be completely comfortable saying that you were sexually assaulted when you were a kid. And I said, well, it's because it wasn't my fault. And I need other people to know that if they were a child and they were sexually assaulted, it wasn't their fault either. And if you ignore the legalities of children beyond a certain age cannot give consent, if you ignore that and you just look at human nature, children are not sexy. And children do not know anything except what they are taught, either by intentional teaching or accidental teaching. What we show them is appropriate behavior. When a dad lets his wife throw things at him because she's mad, he's accidentally teaching his daughters, be in a violent rage, the men will put up with it. And he's accidentally teaching his sons, this is what you should expect to put up with. And there are people that would argue he's not accidentally doing it, he's making a choice to do it. But again, there are some people that don't know they have the right to be treated better than that. Stop Feeding the Predators did what I refer to as the East Coast Tour. I went through 8 states in 9 days. And I was in Maine, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and no, these are not in any particular order. You know, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York. I mean, I was everywhere along the East Coast. And Stop Feeding the Predators is not a religious organization in any way, shape, or form. But I have to tell you that I get lost a lot. I've lived in Columbus, Ohio, Worthington, Ohio, Dublin, Ohio areas my whole life. And I still get lost here. And these are places that I've been to repeatedly. These are the same roads I've driven down. You know, I should know my way around. And for the most part, I do. But I have still gotten lost where I know where I'm going. The East Coast tour, I had a rental car, so I had a vehicle I wasn't familiar with. I went to places that I've never been before in my life. I spoke with people. My initial contact people were people that I had never met. I had spoken to a couple of them on the phone. The rest of them I met after I got there. And the thing that amazes me that again, Stop Feeding the Predators is not about religion. But if you know how much I get lost, you put me in places I've never been, a car I've never driven, people I didn't know. Not only did I not get lost once, but I was also on time to everything that I attended. And if you know me, you know that is bizarre too. I consider it an act of God. I would be driving down the freeway. I call it a freeway, sorry, I don't remember. I-95, I think it was. Everywhere I went, there were roadblocks, and they were always in the other lane, or they were on the ramp on the other side, not the one I needed. Silly story, I'm driving along, and I'm, you know, on time, going where I don't know where I'm going, and I see a car door laying in the middle of the road. There's three lanes. I'm in the middle lane. There's a car next to me in the fast lane on the left. And on the right side, I see a car door laying in the road. And I thought, oh my goodness, there must be quite an accident if the car door is still laying here. Further up ahead, I saw a bunch of cardboard in that same lane, not in my lane, in that lane. And a little further up from that, there was some styrofoam and some other stuff in the fast lane on the left of me. Again, not in my lane. Just past that, I saw a pickup truck with a label on the side indicating that they were a car parts distributor. So apparently they were driving their pickup truck with this car door in a box, you know, encased in a box safely in the back of the car. And somehow the box and the door and everything ended up separating out and flying out of the truck. But I thought how odd it was. I thought it was cool, don't get me wrong. But I thought how odd it was that every time I encountered debris in the road, it was not in the lane I was traveling in. And no, I didn't stay in the middle lane the whole time. There were times I would change lanes, you know, as you do when you're driving. You get into the slower lane because you're not sure if your exit's coming up soon or somebody's driving too close and you want to get out of their way. Or you're in the fast lane because you know you're going to be here for a while and you're trying to get around slower moving traffic, whatever. So I changed lanes frequently, and there was never anything in my lane. There was road construction, as is typical in July. And the road construction was never on the roads that I had to take. There would be signs saying road work ahead, and they would have a road closed before my exit, or the road was closed after my exit, or the entire freeway was shut down to one lane instead of three, 4 miles after I had needed to exit. So again, divine intervention, whatever, I was definitely taken care of on this trip. I met a lot of people and gave presentations at churches, recovery groups, you know, just gatherings of friends even. And while I was there, I did a live radio show, and it was with City of Angels Recovery Radio. And that went so wonderfully that of course has led to this weekly broadcast that you're listening to now. Or if you're listening to it in the archives, we wouldn't be here if I hadn't done the East Coast tour. And there have been so many blessings from that tour. And I don't mean blessing in a religious way. I mean, wonderful things have happened as a result of that. I try to be careful when I talk about God's effects or influence or directing me, because when I was a child, I knew how much God hated me, and I knew that I was a horrible person, and I knew these things, and I wish you could see, I'm giving quotes to saying that I knew these things, because all these really awful things kept happening to me, and nobody was protecting me. Now, again, my mom didn't know that I needed protecting, but it made me feel like I didn't matter, and I was a bad person because these awful things kept happening. And I was absolutely terrified of even saying the word God, because I was afraid that he would strike me down. And God has changed my life, and I look back and see where he has protected me. And it's really sad that as a child, I should have been embracing the one that was protecting me. And instead, I was hateful of God. I didn't have a feeling like, why did he let this happen to me? I know a lot of people do have that feeling. I didn't feel like, why did he let this happen to me? I felt like, I'm so awful that I made this happen to me. And if you have a chance to drive past a preschool without being creepy and look at the kids playing on the playground, you know, look at those little kids. They should never be thinking that they should be hated. They should never have a thought in their head that they're doing something so wrong that they would, you know, explode into a million pieces just by saying the word God. It's really sad how the abuse distorted my views of what a loving God was. In my daughter, and I'm sure she won't mind me sharing this. If she does, I'll apologize profusely, but I think it can help a lot of people. My daughter said when she found out about God, the reference was, God is your loving father. And my daughter said, well, I know what my dad did to me, so I don't want anything to do with God. And who can blame her? You know, and I think for many people that have been abused, the idea of God being a protective, loving father is difficult to imagine when we've been abused by our fathers or our father figures. And even for men who've been sexually assaulted when they were children, the idea of a loving father as God can be hysterical, because they've seen what so-called loving fathers can do, you know, or father figure. And there are some men that have been sexually assaulted by women. And even though we're talking about God the Father, and I'm sure men have just as much trouble thinking of a loving parent when they're thinking of what their mom or their mother figure did to them. So I'm getting way off base, but I wanted to emphasize that when I talk about God, it is based on the knowledge that I have today, and I know my 3-year-old self wouldn't talk to me if I said God loves you. And even though God does love you, that's not what Stop Feeding the Predators is about. We're not here to tell you what your religion should be. We're not here to tell you what you should believe. Stop Feeding the Predators is a nonprofit organization to help you find your healing, however that may be. whether that factors religion into it or not for you is up to you. It's not up to us. We're not telling you what to believe. If you have a strong faith in God, that's wonderful. If you're an atheist, if you still hate God because of what happened to you, if you don't believe, agnostic, whatever, it doesn't matter. Stop Feeding the Predators will help you process the emotions that you have from being assaulted or from being the family member of someone who's assaulted. And that's our goal. We use the phrase, healing starts here. And my 48-year-old opinion, which is only my 48-year-old opinion, is that God is the only one can heal. Now, if you have a different opinion of what can heal, I will respect that completely. But with Stop Feeding the Predators, when we say healing starts here, we're not talking about God. We're talking about acknowledging to yourself, out loud, possibly to another human being, somebody hurt me when I was little, and I'm not okay. And everybody's familiar with the idea, once you admit you have a problem, that's the first step to fixing it. And healing starts when you can say, even to yourself, hey, you know what? I'm really not doing so good. I'm really not okay with where I am. I'm really not comfortable being the person that I am today. And my relationships aren't what I'd like them to be. And my past is a mess that I don't want to look at, but I think I have to. That's when healing starts. Again, I'm way, way off the path of my topic of conversation. But the point is, Stop Feeding the Predators is not going to tell you what to believe. I tell people when I hand out business cards, I say it's not religion and it's not selling anything. And I've had some people say, really, it's not religion? And I say, nope, because your relationship with God is up to you. If you have one or if you don't, it has nothing to do with me. And that's truly what I believe. When I hand out business cards, I have a lot of people who, I do this in a respectful way. I have a lot of people who will take me aside or find a way to get a moment alone with me and disclose to me something that they have been through. Many of those people, when I ask them, would you care to share more? You know, what happened next? Were there charges? Was there prison? Was law enforcement involved? How did you get to where you're safe? And I almost want to cry because of the number of people that have said to me, sorry, I am going to cry. The number of people who have said to me, I've never told anyone that before. And I've had a few people in their 20s tell me that, but mostly the people that tell me that are between 40 and 70. And these abuses happened when these people were children. You know, many of them were younger than 10. And I apologize for my crying. My crying is a mixed thing. Part of me feels so sad that they had to carry that guilt and that shame and that feeling that they were alone for all those years. And, you know, that's why Stop Feeding the Predators is here, so that people learn that it wasn't just them. And I don't even mean, you know, statistically speaking, that an aggressor doesn't assault only one child. I'm not even talking statistically that way. I just mean there are other people who have been sexually assaulted when they were children. And it wasn't your fault, and you can find help. You can get past that. The other reason that I cry is because I think, what if I hadn't started Stop Feeding the Predators? I'm sorry, I usually don't cry during radio shows. What if I hadn't started Stop Feeding the Predators? What if I hadn't seen somebody with a pretty blouse and said, hey, I really like your blouse. Do you mind if I give you a card? It's not religion and it's not selling anything. Maybe you can take a look at it and see what you think. Would those people have had anyone to tell? And when you think about that, when you think about the possibility that there are people who have taken to their grave sexual abuse that they struggled through their life to find a way to be okay without getting the help that they deserved. One of the first people that I helped to find healing was a gentleman friend of mine. He was 90 when we met, and the very first day I met him, probably within a half an hour of meeting him, he told me that his wife had been sexually abused when she was a child. And I wasn't doing Stop Feeding the Predators at that time. I had registered the name, but I hadn't really done anything with it since then. So I registered the name so I'd have that for my book. And within a half an hour, he told me that he didn't know that she had been sexually assaulted until after her death. Through the years that I knew this gentleman and his family, who I love so dearly, his daughter-in-law, which would have been this woman's daughter-in-law, she said, my mother-in-law told me that I would understand why she was the way she was when she died. And she said that that confused her. She didn't know what that meant. But this woman had been coerced, manipulated, tricked, deceived. I don't care what word you use, they're all the same. And she had been sexually assaulted when she was a child. And the family didn't know until after her death. She left this information for them to find. And the thing is, it was in a place that they could have found it at any point through all of these years. But just the way things were, they didn't know until after she died. This gentleman friend and I spent a lot of time together. And I really didn't talk much about Stop Feeding the Predators as an organization, but there were times that he would ask me questions that if she had been here, he probably would have asked her. You know, why didn't you tell anybody? Things like that. And being somebody who was sexually assaulted as a child and didn't tell, I was able to offer him some insight. And again, I told him, I don't know why she didn't tell, but let me tell you why I didn't tell. Let me tell you what went through my mind of why nobody knew what I was going through. And after 4 years of spending time with him and conversations, there was never a time that we got together that he didn't bring up her abuse. And we were getting together, you know, I was driving him for doctor's appointments or helping him with things that needed done around his house. And every single time we were together, it wasn't necessarily the first thing he asked, but every single time we got together, he would say, "Well, what about this?" And he was really struggling with his anger at her for not telling him. They were married 66 years. And he couldn't get past that he married somebody who wasn't a virgin. He struggled with, "She lied to me before I ever even married her." And as best I could, over 4 years, I helped him to see that in her mind, she is a virgin when they met, because raping someone doesn't take their virginity, it takes their innocence. You know, it distorts their mind. And I helped him think about what would have been a good time for her to tell you. And I'm not going to go into details much more because of respect for the family. But I will tell you that when I said, "Should she have told you at this point?" And he said, "Well, that probably wouldn't have been the best time." "Well, what if she had told you at this point?" "Yeah, I don't know how that would have..." "Well, what if she had told..." And I was able to help him see she obviously wanted him to know, because she left it for him to find after she passed. And if she didn't want him to know, she wouldn't have left it. 2 days before he died, he said to me, we were sitting in the living room eating Wendy's Frosty one night, and we were watching Swamp People on TV, because my friend is a character and I love him so much. And we were just hanging out. You know, he knew that he was going to die. Hospice was involved and all of that, so it wasn't like a shock or anything. But we were sitting there eating Frosties one night, watching Swamp People, and a commercial came on, and he turned to me and he said, "You know what?" And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "I think you're right." And I smiled real big and I said, "Well, nobody says that to me very often. What am I right about?" He said, "I think you're right. She told me the only way she could." And at that, and again, I'm sorry for crying, I really am. At that moment, he forgave her. He knew from all the conversations we had, from hearing what I had been through, and again, not for pity, but so he could understand her. And I didn't offer stuff, it was when he asked. He was finally, after 4 years, able to forgive 68 years of hate, 68 years of anger, 68 years of being lied to. She had passed 2 years before I met him, that's why I'm saying 68 years, because after she died, he found out. And then I met him 2 years later. But I can't imagine her spending her life never having told anyone that. And she obviously wanted to tell people, or she wouldn't have made the comment to her daughter-in-law that she did. She obviously wanted people to know what happened to her, or she would not have left it for them to find after she died. So if someone says that they or a family member had been sexually assaulted, don't you dare put a timeline on how long they have to get over it. Because if they've had no safe place, no safe person to talk about what they've been through, and I'm not talking graphic details, I'm talking about the emotional turmoil, about your head being manipulated so that people can take advantage of you. if they've never had a safe place to do that, don't you dare tell them their time is up and they just have to suck it up and deal with it, because that's not true. Stop Feeding the Predators is here for people who were sexually assaulted and have not been able to disclose. And I don't need the graphic details. I really don't. Whether someone touched you over your clothing or you were violently and brutally beaten and raped, I don't need the details. Stop Feeding the Predators is for people who need someplace safe, non-judgmental, compassionate, to say, somebody hurt me when I was a kid, and I'm not okay. And we can help you find your way to being okay. Whatever that path is for you, we will help you as you're on your journey. We're not going to direct you where to go. We're not going to tell you how you should be feeling. We're not going to tell you how long you should have to process this or that. We are genuinely going to be there through what you're going through. Kind of like a friend that when you're done with all the healing, you don't ever have to see us again. You don't have to worry about what we think of you, knowing your emotions. You don't have to, because you vent, you heal, and you move on. You know, and hopefully you offer compassion to others who need to vent and heal. Many shows we've talked about 12-step program, and Stop Feeding the Predators is not a 12-step program, but I refer to the 12-step program because basically when you go through all 12 steps, the 12th step is, now that you've figured it out, you're going to help other people who are where you were when you were at that first step. And I think that's commendable. I think that's wonderful to get yourself healthy enough that you can help other people who are where you never want to be again, where you never wanted to be in the first place. We've had moms who have guilt because they still love the aggressor. We've had kids who love the parent that abused them, or the uncle or the, you know, cousin or whoever it was. I love them because they're my cousin, but I hate them because they did this. And those are valid feelings, both of them. And you can love somebody for who they are, or who they're supposed to be, or who you thought they were, however you want to phrase it. You can hate them for what they've done. The important thing is making sure that you are safe so this cannot happen again, or that the child is safe so that the aggressor does not have an opportunity a second time to do this again. It's okay to still love the person that did this horrible thing to your child. It doesn't make you a bad person. You're a loving person. That's why you love them. But don't let that love for them cloud your vision that it could and will happen a second time. Because if you don't address it and find ways to keep that child safe, it absolutely will happen again. And please don't think your child is the only one. Because if you think your child is the only one that's been abused by this aggressor, you're giving the implication that there's something about your child that brought out this thought or this feeling in the aggressor. First of all, that's BS. Second of all, that's not fair to the child. That's victim blaming. That's saying, there's something about you, little Susie, that made Uncle So-and-so touch you like that. Absolutely not. Uncle So-and-so is touching other people the same way, and they don't look anything like little Susie. And again, I'm just using random names. I do what I can to protect people's anonymity because I think it's important that your story is not going to be broadcast all over the radio. Obviously, the family of the gentleman I told you about, obviously they have a lot of emotional stuff that they have been through. And I'm certain even more processing, you know, as different thoughts and memories and emotions come up through the years. It's a tough thing to get through. But I want to tell you, and I know this 100%, you can find happiness after you process the emotions from the abuse. You can get to a place where you can have healthy relationships. And I don't just mean male-female or you know, partner relationships. I'm talking about relationships with your kids, relationships with your parents, relationships with your, you know, girlfriends, with your boyfriends, and romantic relationships. You can heal from this abuse and get to a place where you realize that you are, much to your surprise, worthy of love and respect. You will discover that you are not the thing to be used as the aggressor made you feel. You were a child when it happened, or maybe you were a teenager, and teenagers don't like being called children. I know that. I was a teenager. I was not a child. But you didn't make this happen. You didn't cause the abuse. It's not your fault. Sometimes that's a hard thing for us to know and admit, because we've been victimized so long that we forget that we don't have to stay in that role. Talk about a top Hollywood typecast, you know. John Travolta's in town here in Columbus, Ohio, shooting a movie, and, you know, people are all, ooh, a Travolta sighting and this and that. And my thinking is, what would have happened to John Travolta if he had stayed in the Vinnie Barbarino typecast character? You know, just because somebody victimized you doesn't mean that you're a victim. It means that somebody was mean to you and took advantage of you. And you have the right to move past that role. You have the right to be healthy. You have my compassion for you. You have my understanding as best I can to what you've been through. And again, every case is different. I'm not saying I completely understand the emotions, the feelings that we went through, the trauma to our minds, and what that did to us as human beings. That's all fixable. And I know it seems impossible. But I'm Lynn, and I was raped when I was 3. And today I'm 48. And it wasn't my fault then, and it's not my fault now. I was taken advantage of then, and I'm not going to be taken advantage of now. You can heal. You can get past the abuse. You are worthy of love. You are worthy of being respected. And that's why I started Stop Feeding the Predators. If you need to call, our number is area code 614-403-4545. We do not record our phone calls, and we do not automatically call you back. If you get the recorder, you have to leave us a message giving us permission and giving us the phone number, and preferably a timeline, and we will call you back. We don't record the calls. We don't automatically call back. It's an anonymous thing. I don't know if you can find a payphone nowadays, but there are ways that you can block your number from showing up. If you want to call anonymously, there are ways you can do that. And we're here to help. and you've been listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. And healing starts here.